Last night, at my direction, the United States military successfully executed a flawless precision strike that killed the number one terrorist anywhere in the world, Qasem Soleimani.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Elsewhere in California, on KFOI, Red Bluff, Redding, KKRN, Round Mountain, KGOE, Eureka. In Oregon, on KYAQ on the Central Coast, KSO in Cottage Grove, KEPW in Eugene. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, on WLRI. Maui, Hawaii, KAKU. Columbus, Ohio, WGRN. Palinville, New York, WLPP. Grand Rapids, Michigan, WPRR. New Orleans, Louisiana, WHIV. Gallup, New Mexico, KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire, WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas, KPSQ. Seattle, Washington, KODX. Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950, KTNF, and coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, Deprogrammed Radio, and Detour Talk. Blanketing the globe 5 days a week, usually hosted by Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com. But today, for one more day, you got me, Nicole Sandler, host of The Nicole Sandler Show, based at NicoleSandler.com, filling in. Yes, Brad and Desi will be back on the next edition of The Bradcast. But today, oh boy, what a way to start a new decade, huh? Donald Trump is taking us to war against Iran. As unbelievable as it sounds, that's what he's doing. So we're going to try a few things on the program today. One, we're going to check in with a Middle Eastern expert at the Quincy Institute. The Quincy Institute is a new DC think tank that's different from most of those think tanks that specialize in foreign policy, in that the Quincy Institute is all about diplomacy and peace and ending the endless wars. What a concept, right? So we'll speak with one of their Middle East experts about what's going on in Iran. And a little later on, I'm going to attempt something that I've done from time to time on my program, which is calling a city in the world where there's something big going on in the news. Because I don't necessarily trust certainly not the corporate media, but even any kind of media to tell us what's happening. So I try to find out for myself. It's hit and miss. It doesn't always work, but we'll give it our best shot. So that's all coming up. But as usual, we're going to start with a look at the news. And, well, you should probably sit down for this. Donald Trump foreshadowed his own acts of desperation on Twitter just before the 2012 elections. He tweeted on October 9th, 2012, quote, "Now that Obama's poll numbers are in tailspin, watch for him to launch a strike in Libya or Iran. He is desperate." Yeah. 2 weeks later, he tweeted, "Don't let Obama play the Iran card in order to start a war, in order to get elected. Be careful, Republicans." So we know how his demented mind works, or doesn't. In his warped world, this makes sense. On Thursday night, the Pentagon confirmed that a U.S. airstrike at an airport in Baghdad, ordered by Donald Trump, killed Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Quds Force, the number two guy in Iran, just behind the Ayatollah. NBC News Tehran Bureau Chief Ali Arouzi explained just how serious this move is.
I would be very surprised if there isn't some sort of a very serious reprisal from Iran over this. They are going to want to show that they haven't been weakened by the death of Soleimani. They want to show that the IRGC is still very strong and operational. So they will probably strike back. I don't think this has acted as a deterrent. I think this is just going to aggravate the situation much further. As I mentioned to you, Rachel, he is a cult figure in Iran amongst the ruling establishment. They rely very, very heavily on him. He controls all the militias in that region that have made Iran so powerful in that region. So they are going to take this extraordinarily seriously. I'm not sure what kind of a reprisal they're going to unleash, but as you well know, they have multiple groups of proxies spread across the entire region, ready for a moment like this. So this has ratcheted up the stakes hugely. This is probably one of the most significant incidents I've seen happen in Iran over the last couple of decades.
Iranian state TV has cut all broadcasts and is showing pictures of Soleimani on a loop accompanied by prayers. So what prompted Donald Trump to do this? Well, as pointed out above, he thinks this is a political advantage. Secondly, in true wag the dog fashion, Trump has been impeached and is waiting to find out when his trial in the Senate will begin. And just security had the big story of the day until this news broke of unredacted Ukraine documents that clearly show the order to keep the freeze in place came directly from Donald Trump himself. Officially, the Secretary of Defense Mark Esper is claiming the strike was, quote, decisive defensive action, adding, quote, General Soleimani was actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. This strike was aimed at deterring future Iranian attack plans, end quote. So Iran confirmed the death of one of its most active military figures and vowed revenge against the United States. Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah, said in a statement Friday that Soleimani's death was, quote, bitter, but that the final victory will make life more bitter for the murderers and criminals. The entire chain of events appears to have been set in motion by a December 27th rocket attack that killed a U.S. contractor on a base in the Iraqi city of Kirkuk, which the Pentagon blamed on Kataib Hezbollah, an Iraqi militia closely associated with Iran. After the attack, Trump authorized airstrikes on militia targets in Iraq and Syria, which in turn prompted militiamen to attempt to breach the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. The president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, tweeted, "The flag of General Soleimani in defense of the country's territorial integrity and the fight against terrorism and extremists in the region will be raised, and the path of resistance to U.S. excesses will continue. The great nation of Iran will take revenge for this heinous crime." And in related news, the State Department has advised all American citizens to leave Iraq, every last one of them. So Trump and his advisors think the assassination of a country's second in command is proper retaliation for a strike that killed a single contractor? Stay tuned. I never should have said anything yesterday about it being a slow news day. In other news, the Senate is due back in session Friday, with Mitch McConnell set to give his first floor speech of the new decade, in which he'll try to take control of the upcoming impeachment trial. But with the new unredacted documents released Thursday that clearly state that Trump was the person who directly ordered a freeze on aid to Ukraine, the Republicans will have a more difficult time defending their stance on calling no witnesses during the impeachment trial in the Senate. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi still has not sent over those two articles of impeachment to the Senate. The House returns from its winter break on Monday. BuzzFeed News on Friday is publishing the third installment of Robert Mueller's secret memos, which are being turned over as part of Jason Leopold's brilliant FOIA strategy. These memos include new details about Stephen Miller's involvement in drafting the letter firing then-FBI Director James Comey, and how Paul Manafort believed Donald Trump was sending him messages through Sean Hannity while Manafort was in jail. Oy. More quarter four fundraising numbers are out. Amy Klobuchar announcing she raised more than $11.4 million in the fourth quarter, her best fundraising period yet, and more than double the $4.8 million she raised in quarter three, but still quite far behind the top four contenders. Donald Trump on Thursday announced a nationwide ban of all vape flavors except tobacco and menthol. The move would, though, exclude refillable vaporizer liquid flavors, also sold in vape shops. And finally, elections have serious consequences. More than 200 members of Congress on Thursday signed a friend of the court brief filed at the Supreme Court in connection with a challenge to a Louisiana abortion access law that will be heard in March, urging the court to reconsider, if not overrule, the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion nationwide. The letter was signed by 39 Republican senators and 168 members of the House, all but two of them Republicans. By the way, the two siding with the Republicans are Colin Peterson of Minnesota and Dan Lipinski of Illinois. Lipinski is thankfully again being primaried by Marie Newman. Hopefully she'll win. A couple other tidbits before we move on. Mike Pence is now saying that Iran was responsible for 9/11, tweeting a lengthy thread to that effect. Lovely. And we've learned that although Donald Trump didn't give Congress advance notice of the assassination strike against the Iranian general Soleimani, they did tell Israel it was going to happen. Wonder if Putin got a heads up as well. One more thing I want to share with you. This, there's always video, or in this case, audio. Back in 2015, Donald Trump was doing an interview with a right-wing host, radio host, Hugh Hewitt. And it's apparent from listening to this that Donald Trump has no clue who the Quds are, who Soleimani, that was the Iranian Revolutionary Guard that Soleimani was in charge of. And he thinks that when Hugh Hewitt brings up the Quds, he means the Kurds.
Are you familiar with General Soleimani?
Yes.
No.
Tell me.
He runs the Quds forces.
Yes. Okay. Right.
Do you expect
his
behavior?
I think the Kurds, by the way, have been horribly mistreated by us.
No, not the Kurds. The Quds forces, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's Quds forces, the bad guys.
Right.
Do you expect his behavior to change as a result?
Kurds.
No. Kurds.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Kurds.
He has no clue who the Kurds are.
Poorly treated by us.
Even worse now.
So Soleimani runs the Quds forces. Do you expect his behavior is going to change as a result of this deal with Iran?
I think that Iran right now is in the driver's seat to do whatever they want to do.
Well, Soleimani is to terrorism sort of what Trump is to real estate. Many people would say he's the most dangerous man in the world, and he runs the Quds forces, which is their Navy SEAL. Do you think they're going to stop?
That was going back and forth with Russia and meeting with Putin. I read something, and that seems to be also where he's at. He's going back and forth, meeting with other countries, et cetera, et cetera.
That's the guy. On the front of Islamist terrorism, I'm looking for the next commander-in-chief to know who Hassan Nasrallah is and Zawahiri and al-Julani and al-Baghdadi. Do you know the players without a scorecard yet, Donald Trump?
Of course not.
No, you know, I'll tell you honestly, I think by the time we get to office, they'll all be changed. They'll be all gone. I knew you were going to ask me things like this, and there's no reason because, number one, I will hopefully find General Douglas MacArthur in the pack. I will find whoever it is that I'll find. But they're all changing you. You know, those are like history questions. Do you know this one? Do you know that one?
I don't believe in gotcha questions. I'm not trying to, you know, quiz you on who the worst guy in the world is.
Well, that is a gotcha question, though. I mean, you know, when you're asking me about who is running this, that is not, I will be so good at the military, your head will spin.
Oh, God.
It's not gotcha.
All right. Enough of that. I just thought you needed to hear that. This is the guy who's got the nuclear codes. Just saying. Now, I was wondering how they were covering this over on Fox. And much to my shock and surprise, Chris Wallace is still speaking truth over there. So in this segment, I don't know who he's talking to. I think it's the guy maybe who replaced Shepard Smith. Either way, this is kind of telling. Chris Wallace talking to some other news guy, so-called news guy on Fox.
There's no question that the president has shown restraint. In fact, after the American drone was shot down, if you remember, the president agreed and authorized a U.S. strike to take out some of those missile batteries that had hit the American drone and then called it off at the last moment. And he took some criticism at that time that he should have gone ahead and done it, and indicated to the Iranians that you hit us, we're going to hit you back. And, of course, remember how this whole thing began. It was last week when Iranian-backed militias launched a strike, a rocket strike, into an Iraqi base in near Kirkuk and killed an American contractor. The U.S. responded with airstrikes that killed about 25 members of that militia. So we have responded in the past. I think the only question that people have to ask themselves, and again, if there's an imminent plot, you have to react to that. But the only question people are going to ask, this is a really dramatic response. It would be, you know, yes, they're taking out some of our people, we're taking out some of theirs, and then they take out the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. That's, in effect, what Qasem Soleimani was. He was perhaps the second most powerful man in Iran, perhaps even more powerful than the duly elected president, Hassan Rouhani. So it's a big escalation, no question about it. And the question will be, and we'll have to wait and see, whether or not Iran is going to step back and say, boy, this guy Trump means business, or whether they're going to just respond in kind and then we get into even more of a shooting war with Iran, which I don't think anyone wants.
And I wanted to quickly get your take on this political back and forth. The Democrats are saying the president did this because he's trying to distract from the impeachment thing.
Here we go.
To go back a few years and put this tweet on the screen. This is from 2011. President Trump, Donald Trump at the time, tweeted, "In order to get elected, Barack Obama will start a war with Iran." 2 years later, he tweets, "Remember what I previously said, Obama will someday attack Iran in order to show how tough he is." So politics always kind of makes its way into these things, Chris.
Well, remember, back in 1998, when Bill Clinton was under impeachment, he launched a strike against al-Qaeda territory in Afghanistan, and there was a movie out at the time called Wag the Dog, just coincidentally, which raised the possibility a president would start a war to try to distract from his political problems. So this is something that's always out there.
And has happened, and is happening now. Frankly. So I think at least Chris Wallace is still over there to speak a bit of truth to those people who are just not paying attention. If you go on social media, it's like Trump hasn't been impeached yet. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay. And they're applauding this move, which is just frightening. Richard Engel is the national foreign correspondent for NBC News, and I always love his work. Here's a report that he filed, part of a report anyway, from Baghdad.
What we're hearing and seeing is that tomorrow, frankly, is going to be a very, very tense day in Baghdad. Already preparations are underway to hold official funerals, official ceremonies for the two people, the two main figures who were killed in this American drone strike. Of course, Qasem Soleimani, the one we've been talking about, the Iranian general who led the external Iranian operations, led its relations with the militias, a very important figure in Iran, and also the deputy head of the militias, the Shia militias in this country. They were together. They were in a convoy together. Apparently, they were in a vehicle together that was attacked, and that was the target of opportunity that U.S. intelligence had been tracking and carried out this attack. So if you could picture Baghdad, I can paint the scene for you. It potentially could be a very explosive and very dangerous situation, because in the middle of Baghdad, you have what is still often called the Green Zone. That is the area where the U.S. Embassy is located. That is the area where quite a number of American forces are located, primarily protecting the embassy, but also with other missions. Around them, not very far away from them, are Shiite neighborhoods that tomorrow are going to be out commemorating, celebrating the martyrdom of these two figures, and they're going to be blaming the United States, and they're going to be in quite close proximity. So there could be some tension. There could be an escalation. We've seen the Shiite leadership in this country calling for calm. But tomorrow, when you have this large number of people, and there are expected to be large crowds, already there are police setting up checkpoints. They're trying to organize what will effectively be a public mourning area in Baghdad in close proximity to the embassy. There could be problems.
That's Richard Engel of NBC News. Whatever is going on, it's frightening. And I'm not sure what we do from here. So we'll take a quick time out and come back on the other side to chat with Stephen Simon, a Middle East expert at the Quincy Institute, to tell us what the hell's going on over there. I'm Nicole Sandler, filling in once again for Brad and Desi on the Bradcast.
Hey, this is Brad. If you haven't noticed by now, it's no easy feat finding facts, real facts, not alternative facts, over your public airwaves. We try to bring you real facts, truth, and clarity without fear or favor each and every day on the Bradcast. But we need your help to do it. If you enjoy the show and or get something from it, please give back a bit if you can by visiting us at bradblog.com/donate. Your support helps Desi and me continue to bring you real, independent, progressive news 5 days a week over your public airwaves. We simply can't do it without your help, and that help is needed more now than ever. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to make a one-time donation, or even better, automated monthly support. It'll take you about 60 seconds, and you can rest easy knowing that we'll be here every day making sense of it all, or at least trying to. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thanks.
Boom goes London, boom Perry, more room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. Set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be Italian shoes to me. They all hate us anyhow, so let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Brad one more time. He and Desi return on the next episode, I promise. So when the news broke about Donald Trump assassinating the number two guy in Iran, I reached out to Dr. Trita Parsi, who's helped me understand issues concerning Iran for years now. Trita Parsi is now the executive director of a new think tank called the Quincy Institute. Well, Dr. Parsi was obviously in very high demand today and wasn't available when I needed him, so he recommended I speak with his colleague, Quincy Institute senior research analyst Stephen Simon. He's a college professor who spent many years serving both in the National Security Council and in the U.S. State Department, and the Middle East is his area of expertise.
Hi there.
Oh, hey, Stephen. It's Nicole Sandler calling. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, terrific. I was just explaining to the listeners how you came to meet you, courtesy of Trita Parsi. You're at the Quincy Institute, and I've been hoping to get Dr. Parsi on the program to talk about what the Quincy Institute is, because it's still a fairly new organization. And obviously, we had a world event in the meantime, so you've kindly agreed to join us today. But can you give us just a moment and tell us what the Quincy Institute is about?
Well, the Quincy Institute is a new addition to the network of think tanks, policy research organizations, and the like in Washington, D.C. What differentiates it from the blob, as it's called nowadays in the
blob.
Beltway, within the Beltway,
okay,
is that the Quincy Institute favors restraint. That's a principle in U.S. foreign policy, and a strong preference for diplomacy as against the use of military force to try to resolve problems identified by Washington out there in the great wide world. This is a serious departure from the sort of standard conversation in Washington.
Exactly.
So, that's sort of the gist of it.
Perfect. So it's an organization that really promotes peace and diplomacy over warmongering, which is sadly what we're getting from this administration. So, I just recounted in a very basic way what happened over the last few days that led to this airstrike on an airport in Iraq that took out, I guess, the number two guy in Iran.
Looks like is bringing us to the brink of war. So Stephen Simon is with us. You're a professor of, and you've worked in a number of universities around, it looks like, around the country. You served on the National Security Council for a number of years, and that followed a 15-year career at the Department of State, and you're an expert on the entire Middle East. When you heard the news last night that we had bombed and taken out Soleimani, what was your first thought?
Well, I thought, you know, it was a fairly audacious move on the part of the administration, mm-hmm. And a departure from U.S. From U.S. practice, at least until now, and even a departure from the Trump administration's own approach to Iran. I mean, the Trump administration had refrained from using force against Iran even when the people attacked large oil installations in Saudi Arabia several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was a widespread expectation that that would trigger U.S. military intervention, in part because it involved Saudi Arabia, in part because it involved Iran, and in part because oil was at the bottom of it. And the U.S. has, you know, generally insisted on the prerogative of protecting its access to Persian Gulf oil. So that, anyway, it was expected that the Trump administration would act militarily, but rather, to everyone's surprise, Trump turned a blind eye to what the Iranians had done, and this was against the background, more unexpectedly, of the Trump administration reaching out to Iran, even beseeching the Iranian president to renew nuclear talks with the United States. So that was all just really a few months ago.
Right.
And now we have a very different policy.
What is our policy? I mean, look, Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal with Iran. Now he, you know, as you mentioned, he wanted them to come back to the table to negotiate, I guess, another deal after he publicly, you know, has been dissing them for 3 years. Obviously, this is amateur hour. Stephen Simon, you're a veteran of foreign affairs of the State Department of the NSC. Watching how he's conducting our foreign policy, does it make you a little crazy?
Well, the administration, you know, is pretty clearly divided internally on a number of issues. And for that reason, they appear to be acting, in a sort of incoherent or inconsistent manner that's difficult to interpret. I mean, it's clear that President Trump himself has, serious qualms about military commitments overseas. I mean, he likes to talk the talk because it's good with his base, but walking the walk would be a little more problematic. So he tends to avoid that sort of thing. But I think the difference between then and now, that is that moment that, you know, Trump came to the conclusion that his policy of maximum pressure on Iran wasn't working, and that the United States would be best off if it re-entered talks with Iran. The difference between then and now is impeachment.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
there might be other intervening variables, you know, one could think of, but it seems to me that the best explanation is that one. The administration had a pretty compelling reason to change the conversation.
Right, and of course the release. Just yesterday, in advance of this airstrike, a slew of documents and emails in their unredacted form were released that show clearly that Donald Trump was the one that orders to keep the aid from Ukraine came directly from Donald Trump. So that was dominating the headlines yesterday until this happened. This is, I mean, I think to most of us, obviously, an example of, you know, Trump wagging the dog. And, of course, his old tweets are coming up where he's tweeting that back in 2012, now that Obama's poll numbers are in tailspin, watch for him to launch a war in Iran. He's desperate. Well, that was foreshadowing Trump's own desperation. I'm concerned
because obviously Trump has the nuclear codes. That's a big concern. But secondly, what we're hearing from Iran, the response, Iranian state TV has cut off all broadcasts, is showing pictures of Soleimani in a loop accompanied by prayers. And they're talking about massive retaliation. Should we be nervous?
Well, it remains to be seen what the Iranians are actually going to do. I mean, you know, they've got some serious problems in terms of retaliating against the United States, because the United States is a much bigger, more powerful country. So if Iran, you know, proceeds to draw American blood to retaliate for Soleimani's killing, the Iranians open themselves up for a tit-for-tat sequence of violent acts that, at the end of the day, the United States can dominate. So, you know, on the one hand, they would be right to be very cautious. On the other hand, of course, you know, there's probably a lot of pressure, as there would be in the United States if the shoe were on the other foot. There'd be a lot of pressure to retaliate. So they've got to hash this out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how it winds up is anybody's guess right now.
Wow.
Because the pressures for restraint on the one hand and for retaliation on the other are pretty equal right now. So it's not clear what will tip the balance within, you know, the Iranian halls of power, which way they'll decide to go. If they do decide, you know, to kill Americans in response, then, you know, the administration, the U.S. administration, will be constrained to respond in turn. And then it's hard to see how that cycle it gets broken.
Yeah.
You know, what stops that escalation? Because the U.S. and Iranians don't have any diplomatic ties. They don't talk directly to one another. So that makes it very hard to stem a conflict that's escalating rapidly.
Right. Now, let me ask you, Trump, the word from the administration, the official word from Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, is that the strike was, quote, decisive defensive action. And the statement went on to say General Soleimani was actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. This strike was aimed at deterring future Iranian attack plans. Does that make sense to you? An attack of this measure, allegedly, you know, in response to an airstrike that killed one U.S. contractor, was this an appropriate response on our part?
Well, it's clearly disproportionate. Mm-hmm. And the idea that this will deter Iran from acting is questionable, you know, at best.
Yeah.
I mean, it might if the Iranians see an advantage in restraint, because the Iranians can play this very well in Europe and use it to reinforce European support, economic support for Iran. That would be the, I suppose, you know, the clever way to play it. And then everybody's happy. The United States says, well, we've deterred Iran.
Yeah.
And now, since we've deterred Iran, you know, the door is now open to negotiations with Iran with no loss of face for either side. So the president, in that case, had protected his political flank by changing the conversation from impeachment to a nuclear deal with Iran. And the Iranians reinforce European support, and they get back on board with talks that will ultimately lead to the relief of sanctions that are very damaging to the Iranian economy. That would be the smart way it would all play out. That'd be great.
Yeah, but
but it might not.
Right. That's smart and Trump don't necessarily go together. You know, it just doesn't. One of these things is not like the other.
I take that point. So, you know, it's a very fraught situation, you know, obviously. And the ball is very much in Iran's court. at this point, and we can only wait to see, you know, how they decide to play this, whether they opt for retaliation or they opt for a more kind of sophisticated diplomatic response. If they opt for retaliation, then you know, the escalation could turn out to be very difficult to confine, and we might be talking about a full-fledged war between the United States and Iran.
Oh my God!
You know, if they go the other way, well, you know, some good may have come of this may have come of this thing. But generally speaking, the United States doesn't assassinate, you know, people. In fact, there's an executive order.
It wasn't supposed to. Right?
Well, there's an executive order that actually forbids, you know, employees of the United States government from engaging in assassinations or conspiring with others to engage in assassinations. There's a very good reason for this, of course, which is that once you open that door, you know, the other guy could come looking for you.
Yeah,
and we know it's very difficult to protect people from assassination. So, you know, U.S. policymakers always thought that the better part of valor here was just to avoid opening that door. Well, you know, now the U.S. administration has opened that door and walked right through it.
Yep.
And we'll soon see who else walks through that door.
Right. Now, Stephen Simon is with us. He's a Middle East expert from the Quincy Institute, which you should check out at QuincyInst.org, QuincyInst.org, because they do advocate for peace and diplomacy, unlike many of the other D.C. kind of think tanks. But I want to ask you about the people of Iran. Iran is actually a very young nation and very Western-leaning. I'm not talking about the Ayatollah and the religious leaders, but the actual citizenry of Iran. These were people who stood with us after 9/11, right? These are people who are sort of Western, do like Americans, or did. What is the attitude of the average person in Iran toward America?
Well, to be honest, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
You know, because there's no reliable polling.
Right.
So, you know, it's really, as an analytical matter, it's hard to comment on it. You know, I think there are a lot of the vast majority of the Iranian population is quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think many, you know, don't like the regime.
Right.
Because the regime hasn't delivered in important ways. And if you're a young person, you know, the values of the regime, the religious values are kind of, you know, they're a bit oppressive. So, you know, there may be a lot of people who don't like the regime, but I don't know how many people, you know, like or dislike the United States.
Right.
The U.S. has always had a lot of appeal, you know, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, whether the Iranian population in a confrontation between the United States and Iran will somehow side with the United States, you know, seems pretty unlikely.
Right. And Trump has spent the last 3 years alienating all of our allies. Do you see if this leads to war, knowing how this is coming about? It sure seems like we're the aggressors here. Do you see any of our allies wanting to fight with us here?
Well, it's a possibility, you know, that some Gulf Arabs would join in a fight. I mean, they get wrapped up in the fight anyway, whether or not they wanted to join in. And I'm sure the Israelis would be very happy to cooperate.
Of course, the Israelis would. Right. It's going to be us and Israel against the world.
I mean, from a military perspective, it looks a lot like the United States and Israel are in a kind of combined air campaign against Iranian installations in the region.
Right.
So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that you know, the Israelis would jump on board, but our NATO allies, you know, would not get involved.
Right. Wow. As somebody who spent his entire adult life working
in the State Department, working in the National Security Council, working with Middle East issues. How are you feeling today? Are you as freaked out as I am, or are you more cautiously optimistic by some chance?
Well, I can't recall it ever having been optimistic.
Uh-huh. And at that point in the interview, my audio died. I'm Nicole Sandler, and I have computer issues. Seriously, I've been battling a new computer since I set it up because the old one was buggy in my life story. Anyway, I did thank our guest, Stephen Simon, who is a senior research analyst at the Quincy Institute. You can find them online at quincyinst.org. And one of these days, we'll treat a Parsi about the Quincy Institute. He's the executive director over there. And it is a think tank dealing with foreign policy, but with their emphasis on peace and diplomacy. What a concept. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And when I come back on the other side, I'm going to share with you something that I've done on my show when we have these world events and I'm not satisfied with the information I get from the news media, whether it be the corporate media, independent media. I like to reach out to human beings. So I started back years ago during the Arab Spring. I decided that the best thing I could do would be to call hotels around Tahrir Square. And I focused on hotels because I figured they would have people speaking English at a hotel. So I had one of the most amazing conversations with a person I had never met before at a hotel just off Tahrir Square during the Arab Spring uprising. And so I've done it a few times since then. So, you know, you just heard Stephen Simon say he doesn't know what the attitude of the average Iranian person is towards the U.S. because we have no diplomatic channels with them. So I'm going to give it a shot, right? We're going to call hotels in Tehran until I find somebody who will talk to us. That's coming up next. I'm Nicole Sandler, your guest host today on the broadcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Give me love, give me love, give me peace on earth. Give me life, keep me.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. I'm Nicole Sandler, host of The Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com. In for Brad and Desi for one more day. They'll be back for the next episode, I promise. Okay, so we're calling a hotel in Tehran to try to find an average Iranian citizen to talk to. It's the ultimate cutting out of the middleman in our quest for peace. I call hotels because I think the chances of finding someone who speaks English is better that way. So let's give it a shot.
Oh, that was the family.
Hi, do you speak Hello, do you speak English?
Hi.
Hi, do you speak English?
Yes, really.
You speak
yes.
English? Hi, my name's Nicole.
Hi.
And I'm actually calling from America because it looks
like
I'm calling from the United States because I'm concerned.
Okay.
I'm concerned about what's going on between our two countries. Can I ask you, I don't want your name. I don't want you to identify yourself. I didn't say where I'm calling. I'm on the radio. I'm on an internet radio station here. Can you tell me if you guys are as freaked out as we are about what's going on right now, about the possibility of some kind of war?
Sorry, now 12:09, tomorrow morning call, okay?
Tomorrow morning I should call. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
All right. I guess he couldn't talk. All right. Well, I'm going to try this other one because that one worked. So we'll give it one more shot. You know, I've done this from time to time over the years. The first time I did it was during the Arab Spring, and I called hotels around Tahrir Square, and I had some of the best conversations with people who were just hoping that the world was going to all of a sudden get better. And sadly, that's not what happened. So now I'm calling this other hotel. They do speak English. And from what I understand... Hello, do you speak English?
Hello.
Hi, do you speak English?
Hello, Mo. How may I help you?
Yes. Yeah. Hi. My name's Nicole. I'm calling from the United States. Can we talk? I'm calling just to say that I'm kind of upset, very upset about what's going on. And I wanted to speak with just an average person in Iran to tell you that we have no hard feelings towards you. Are you as freaked out as we are about what's going on between our two countries right now?
You know, it's something normal in Iran, Mom. There's nothing to worry about. If you want to see anything, if you want to read the news, the websites, the online websites, the newspapers, everything are okay. But about the hotel, if you have any question, I can answer.
No, I call a hotel because I figured people would speak English there. I just want to know if the average person in Iran...
No, if you want to speak directly to someone, it's okay, but you're speaking to someone that has no news, you know.
No news, but
because you can open the website and ask about it. Hold up, please.
Okay. Well, he speaks good English, right? He just doesn't seem like he wants to talk to me very much.
Sorry, Mom. It's really crowded here.
Oh,
just
it
open
is.
Open the website and read all the news.
Okay. I actually wanted to know just an average person.
Sorry,
what
I can't
you
give
think.
Any
you
information.
I got you.
Directly from the phone.
Okay.
Sorry, Mom, if you have
all
any
right.
question about the hotel, about the rooms, I can help you.
I got you. Just know, American people, we're good. We really don't want war with you guys. Do not want war.
Mom, it's not in my business. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not a politician. I'm a receptionist.
I got
if
you.
You. Have any, I'm repeating it again. If you
I
have
understand.
Any question about the hotel, I can answer it.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry to bother you.
Welcome. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye. Should I try another one? I mean, I feel like there's people out there. They all speak English. Listen to how good their English is. I'm going to try one more hotel if I can find another hotel listing. All right, I've got one more phone number that we'll try calling it just because we can. Why not? Let's give it a shot. All right. Calling Iran again. And this number is, now that I figured out how to find the phone numbers, 8820-2018. We'll give it one more shot. And if this doesn't work, well, then I say at least we tried. We're trying to broker peace between the United States and Iran. Because I don't know about, well, I do know about you. You don't want war either. Donald Trump has no right to do this. He didn't consult Congress. In fact, I have... Hi, do you speak English?
Yes, madam, I speak English.
Hi, my name is Nicole. I'm calling from the United States. Just as a person, person to person, I want to reach out to someone in Tehran to tell you that we do not want to fight with you guys, that we have a madman as president who's doing things that does not have the approval of most of the American people. So I want to know if you guys, regular Iranians, really just hate us in America, or you realize that we're human beings too, and most of us don't like Donald Trump and don't like what he's doing.
Of course, lady, we know about that, but we as a nation, we don't war, we just love peace. We do love peace, just know that, but... This is a game with, the politicians, not with the people.
Right. No, it's terrible. And we're trying to get Donald Trump out of office. You know, he's been impeached. He should not be. And the reason I think he's doing these crazy things is because he knows he's being impeached. We want to get him out of office. I'm so sorry. The general that we killed, Soleimani, is this somebody that you respect, somebody that you have affection for?
No. I don't know what to tell you about the killing or killing the our general. But may I ask you a question? Can you tell me again everything that you told me? Because I want to record it and you know, send to my friends.
Oh, absolutely. My name is Nicole, and I do a radio show on the internet, and I wanted to reach out to somebody in Iran as a human being to tell you that what our government is doing is not in our name. We do not agree with this. Most of us are freaked out about what's going on, and I wanted to reach out to just another human being in Tehran to tell you we don't want war with you. We want peace. We have crazy people running the government, and it's not okay. We're trying to get this guy out of office. So I called a hotel because that's where I figured I'd find somebody who can speak English, and I'm glad you did. And so I'm so thankful that you're talking to me. So that's what this is about. I'm actually doing a radio show. I didn't identify you, so there's no way anyone can tell who I'm talking to. But thank you for talking to me. How do you guys feel about the United States? All we hear, the media tells us that people in Iran chant death to America. Is that how most of you guys feel?
No, it's not. I don't feel that. I don't want war. I don't want death to America and the great nation of America. But just know that as an Iranian, I'm sending you this message. We do love peace. We are running from war, any war, small, big, any war. And we are sad about this terror attack from the United States. But we do love the America, United States nation. And don't forget that.
Okay. And I want you to know that most of us do not go along with Donald Trump. We have a weird system here in elections that lets the guy who got fewer votes win because it's all messed up. We want him out of office. He's already been impeached because he's a bad, bad guy. He's a bad man. And I want to reach out to say Donald Trump does not speak for me. And his actions, we are livid. We're freaked out that he did this. And we don't want war. We want peace. That's why I wanted to reach out human being to human being. And I'm so glad you picked up the phone. It's very
Thank
nice
you very
to meet
much.
You. I
Thank
wish
you.
We would meet under different circumstances. What can we do to keep from going to war? Do you have any thoughts other than kicking Donald Trump out of office?
I'm not sure about that because I don't know much from politics. I just
right.
I hope and I beg for you know to be each side, you know, both sides. I mean, the United States and Iran. To be calmed down and not to do any, you know, violence attack to from each other. But we're waiting and we hope peace. We hope to both sides to calm down.
Yes, I hope so too.
Tell you this.
Now, what about Hassani, the president there, and the Ayatollah have been saying that they're going to, you know, take retribution on the United States?
Revenge. Yes. I'm not sure, but I hope that they don't take revenge because it makes the circumstances and a little bit difficult and you know complicated. But we cannot predict absolutely what is going on in future in few days or in few hours. But we have to be calm down and be smart.
Absolutely. The average person over there, do they feel like you, or are there factions that does believe death to America, but other factions that want a more democratic way of life there?
No, this is a small, you know, population that have this, you know, opinion. But I can tell you that most of Iranian people, more than 95%, 98% of Iranian people do not believe that we should get in the war together. Mm. But death to America is, you know, really stupid sentence.
Yeah.
We do not use this in our dialogue every day. But I never use this, even in school, even in all, you know, all days of my life. Just know that.
Okay.
Well, would you like to see have elections over there and have a more secular government rather than the rule of the Ayatollah?
I cannot predict. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say.
I gotcha. And I know I understand your, you know, hesitancy to speak. I know that there's a chilling effect over there.
Thank you so much
for talking to me. Just know that all Americans are not evil, and many of us just want to be friends.
Okay. We know that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Happy
New Year.
I really
appreciate your time for talking with me and calling to me.
And I really appreciate you talking to me. Thank you so much. And best wishes for a happy New Year, a peaceful New Year.
Of course. Happy New Year, lady. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good time.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. Well, it took a few tries. It took a lot of missteps on my part. But, wow, that's what I wanted to hear. See, and he said 95-98% of the people feel the way I do. I honestly believe that if real people would just talk to one another and get the idiots like Donald Trump and, you know, John Bolton and Mike Pompeo out of the way, we could change the world. Seriously. It would be so much better if we could just get rid of the politicians. Just saying. And with that, we come to the end of another edition of the Bradcast. Thankfully, Brad and Desi will be back from vacation for the next episode. I'm Nicole Sandler, signing off. I hope if you've enjoyed the last few days, you'll check out my show at NicoleSandler.com. Podcasts are free, so check them out. Until next time, I leave you with those immortal words of Brad Friedman, and I couldn't mean them any more than I do right now. Good luck, world.